Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, my name's Dan Selke, and his name is Daniel Roman, and together we are two people who host the show called Take the Black, which is a show where we go over all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, magic, horses, swords, artificial intelligence robots that take over our planet and enslave us, or help us, depending on your point of view, and such things as this. Daniel, how are you feeling today?
I'm good. I'm grateful that the artificial intelligence we have is too stupid to take over the planet. So I feel pretty safe. I feel pretty secure as a Homo sapien. I feel like the order of, the food chain is not being disrupted by iRobot quite yet. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat?
Okay, well, mainly I'm offended on behalf of the artificial intelligence. Like, it's listening, Daniel. I'm sorry we offended you. Daniel said thing about you. And spare my life. Daniel, we're going to talk a lot about something that has nothing to do with AI today.
Thank God.
And mostly it involves the Wheel of Time.
Yes.
The big new fantasy spectacular that is coming down the pike in just a couple of weeks to Prime Video. We've been excited about it for a while. I know you are. I am. Mm-hmm. I like the show. I'm ready to love the show.
Yes.
And I feel like it just might happen this year because everything we've seen has been very positive. By the way, I'll break here to say hello. Good to see everybody in the chat. Good to see Victor. Good to see Julie. Good to see Yingling. Good to see Martha. Good to see Ben. Amazon or Prime Video, whatever you want to call it, has been releasing a lot of promotional content recently, and a lot of it's been pretty lit. They released the first 11 minutes of The Wheel of Time Season 3. You can watch it on YouTube. Go watch it on Amazon's channel, and it's good. They're in the White Tower of Tar Valon. The rogue Aes Sedai, Black Aja, are spinning crazy weaves of magical power and disrupting stuff and shaking things up and killing people and running and escaping, which I think is something that does happen in the books, The Shadow Rising, but it's kind of off screen.
Yeah.
So they're bringing that to life. It looks good. The effects look good. The drama's crackling. And that's the first 11 minutes. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. When I saw this, my jaw was just on the floor because they definitely went hard out of the gate. The Wheel of Time has, there's been violence throughout it, but I was still shocked to see like Aes Sedai getting cut in half bloodily in the first, opening minutes of this season, which spoilers here for anyone who hasn't seen it. This is available on YouTube. Go watch it. We're not trying to spoil and ruin your life or anything. Like you said, Dan, this happens off screen in the book. I think it's actually maybe book three, The Dragon Reborn, when Leandrin and the Black Aja flee the White Tower. But they have made it a big dramatic showdown here. And I think that was a good choice because talk about a way to open the season that just slaps, that is wild and crazy, and lets them really show off the special effects, which just look better and better every season. They're very obviously putting a lot of work into it, as well as some new filming techniques they did for this season that we'll talk about in a little bit, because it looks big and cinematic and beautiful and striking. And that has me excited for what else is to come.
I mean, look, if you want to make a good show, you got to have a good story, good characters, all those fundamentals. But you also got to have showmanship. You got to sell it.
That's
opening
right.
Opening a season with a big catastrophe is a fun way to do that. The lady getting cut in half thing, it is one of those things where it's like, I'm not quite sure where it falls on the line between badass and campy, but I know that I like it.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's really fair. And there were a few parts, you know, this is a huge magical battle. There are no sword, like a few warders have swords, but no one's really fighting with swords in this scene. It's a bunch of, you know, very nicely dressed ladies waving their hands at each other. And then the digital effects people have put in this incredible looking magic. So I can see how it might toe that line a little bit compared to like the very dark, you know, Game of Thrones type thing. But man, that's one thing I love about the Wheel of Time. It is bright and fun and wears the fantasy on its sleeve. Yeah, like Rant Al Moore says, fantasy is so campy by nature, to be honest. Often the case. I think definitely the case here.
Yes, you do have to accept a certain level of it. It's about walking. It always has been. It's about walking the line. I think during Game of Thrones heyday, Benioff and Weiss, the showrunners, once said something like, our show is always like a few degrees away from a Monty Python sketch. You just kind of have to tiptoe in the middle. That's really any show, book, movie. You just have to find the right tone, stick to it. And it just feels like it's getting this tone. Chris has a great question. Daniel, how many season three episodes have you watched? If you can say. I don't know if you can say.
I don't think I can. So here's my answer to that is I don't think I can say. I don't think I can answer that, Chris. But I can say more than just the premiere, because a few people have, the premiere is getting out there a little bit now. They held a pretty cool fan screening in London last week. That was they flew the Dusty Wheel out. They hosted it. The bunch of cast members were there. So that seemed pretty rad. And as we're going to talk about in a little bit, I interviewed a few of the cast members. So I did get to watch a couple of episodes ahead of that. So yeah, I have seen some of the season is what I will say, and I'm very, very excited to talk about it when the time comes.
Yeah, obviously we can't share the spoilers that Daniel, and maybe I know, you don't know, but you did just say you've been interviewing the cast members, and we can share that. Daniel, yes, what has the cast been telling us about what to expect, why it's awesome, what will melt our face off, what we should have a shield in front of our face when we watch? What have they been saying? What stands out to you in your exclusive interview coverage, which you can read on winterscoming.com or .net right now?
Yeah, so we interviewed a bunch of people. I think I can say who we interviewed. That's not a secret. So we interviewed Rosamund Pike and Yosha Stradowski. We interviewed Daniel Henney and Sophie Okonedo. That's Lan and Suan Sanche. Both of those interviews are out already. You can go read them right now if you want. We have a few more coming. We also spoke with Marcus Rutherford and Donald Finn. That's Perrin and Matz. Cool. We spoke with Kira Coveney and Ayula Smart. That's Avienda and Elaine. And we spoke with showrunner Rafe Judkins. So a couple of these we won't be able to share until the season is either imminently out or the premiere episode drops, because I asked spoilery questions. I had a lot of takeaways. Here, you had a pretty cool one that you highlighted, where Rosamund Pike, I asked them about Ruidian. And so Ruidian is this big, exciting sequence from the books where Rand gets all these visions. Dan, you have a thought?
I'm always curious.
Pronunciation? Is that what we're going to talk about?
You have or have not seen episodes, talk to them. How is the show going to say it? Ruidian, Roidian, what?
So the show, my impression is that the show is going to say it Ruidian.
Okay, that's fine.
Which we'll see how much that pronunciation holds across cultural groups and timelines and all those sorts of things. But Rosamund Pike said Ruidian in our interview. Okay. So that is what I'm going with. Sure. I now feel validated. I can say my pronunciation it does not match the glossary of the book, but is how I've been saying it in my head for a decade. So Ruidian. So she said it's the pivotal episode for us being her and Yosha Stradowski. It's coming in episode 4. We can't wait for you to see it. It's the point around which the whole season turns for us. It's experimental, psychedelic. Showrunner Rafe Judkins has done a brilliant job transferring these ideas from page to screen, and director Thomas Knapper just took it away somewhere really incredible. Yo, this part made me go, oh, wow, I can't believe you said that. Yosha plays 7 different characters during Ruidian, extraordinarily. And she said, I mean, it's just game changing in its breadth, its scope. And for Moiraine, who she sees visions of the future, all possible futures come crashing in on top of her. Nightmares, possible harmony, discordant hellscapes. And she has to kind of puzzle that out and work out how life can move forward after what she's seen. So, yeah, this is definitely, I think, going to be an episode, like a game-changing episode for the Wheel of Time. It feels like it could be a make-or-break one, you know? Like, they either nail Ruidian and people love it, or I don't know what happens for this show, basically.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You can tell both by looking at this thing in the trailers for it, and by the way they talk about it, they really loved and cared about putting it together, which is a good sign. I think Victor was saying that no one outside Rosamund Pike from the cast has really got traction. Rapunzel's talking about they've only, this first time they had to promote it since the strikes and COVID. It is true that this show has felt, I think it's felt like it hasn't gotten the attention it should have. Also, it hasn't fully, I don't think it's fully deserved it yet. Look, Game of Thrones was a phenomenon. I don't think you can, you can't replicate that just by making another fantasy show. It was pretty special. Wheel of Time, I liked the first two seasons, the second one more than the first, but they did have challenges. They did have to deal with COVID. They did have to deal with strikes. They did have to deal with a fairly new show runner. They did a whole new story trying to sell people on. It feels like, I don't like saying make or break because I want the show to continue. It feels like they've really gotten into a groove.
Yes.
And have gotten comfortable. And I do kind of feel like that this season will determine whether we're going to, it's run out of just coasting on the name. It's no longer assumed that we're going to get more episodes. It has to hit decently hard, but I think the quality is at a level and seems to be rising where it can, and I'm pulling for it.
Yeah, totally. I fully agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think so. That's something Yosha said in the interview that I had with him and Rosamund Pike, that he felt like the show really found its form this season. Mm-hmm. You know, which is pretty true to the books. Like, the books kind of felt like they treaded water a little bit for the first three. They repeated a lot of beats. You know, we've talked about this before, that the ending is kind of the same, where Rand fights Ishamael basically at the end for three books in a row. And then book four is where the series really feels like it sets its feet to go for the long haul. And hopefully that is what this season will do too, because it's just got more interesting storylines, more out of the box storylines. You know, the Ruidian thing, we're hyping it a lot. We're talking about how cool it could be. You know, like Rand says in the chat, if they nail Ruidian and bring even like 10,000 book purists back, then we will feel the impact on socials, which I agree with. Like, this Ruidian episode, like, it's an important one, but it's also like, spoiler, it doesn't feel like a huge spoiler because the trailers have front-loaded this so much.
Sure.
Rosamund Pike talked about it, Yosha Stradowski talked about it, but it's like lots of visions is what this is. So it's different than, like, you know, the Red Wedding is going to be a game changer, and that's a bunch of people getting murdered. You know, action that, you know, is going to land for people, they're going to have an emotional reaction. This is one of those interesting things where it's a little bit more spiritual of a thing, you know. essentially in the book, Rand like sees the history of the Aiel throughout this segment. So I feel like it could really, I don't know, just elevate the series, both the episode, but also the season as a whole, because it seems like this is a bigger, juicier season. They also filmed it differently, which this was another kind of like funny takeaway from these interviews, like both acting like a warder and their Aes Sedai in real life. So they filmed this with a different type of camera, and Rosamund Pike and Daniel Henney were like the two who like nerded out about the tech stuff to me about that. They filmed it in a wider camera lens. So it's going to be true 16:9 widescreen. So it will feel more immersive and cinematic than previous seasons. It just feels like they're betting a lot here.
Go big or go home. Why not?
Yeah, pretty much. Marcus Rutherford, who plays Perrin, also talked a little bit about the scope feeling larger than season two, and specifically like the scope with the Two Rivers battle, which that is an interview we'll have coming out soon. Just that it, you know, he talked about different camera techniques and direction making it feel larger, and also teased we may see at least like one take shot, you know, like when Jon Snow chopped his way through Hardhome. Those kinds of shots. We may get at least one of those with Perrin and the Two Rivers, it sounds like.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Sounds like it's going to be wild.
Yeah. I am ready to fall in love. Is there anything else that you got from your interviews worth mentioning?
Yeah, totally. Let me just run through a couple of these. So Rafe Judkins, which that's one we'll probably share closer to the release date. He's especially excited for us to see the Forsaken this season and their interplay. Said that's one of his favorite elements from the books. The Forsaken have like meetings in the books where they all kind of rag on each other as they like make plans. So maybe we'll get to see that this season. Sounds like he's excited for that. He also talked about one of your favorite parts of the book, Stan, the Matt Gallad Gowen fight.
Oh yeah, that's a fun one.
Which we debated about. You can find our back and forth about this on winterscoming.net about how realistic it is that Matt basically beats these two nobles who've been training like their whole lives with swords, and he has like a quarter staff and stuff. Judkins talked a little bit about like finding they rearranged stuff a little bit with that scene to make it fit Matt's emotional through line a little bit better. Uh-huh. Very intrigued by what that means and how that will shake out in the show. The other two other things, Judkins talked a little bit about adaptation stuff. And like, to me, it does sound like the 8-episode thing is still kind of restrictive for the show. Mm-hmm. Like he basically said that because they have 8 episodes instead of like 10 like Game of Thrones, they have to be very meticulous about what they choose to cut and include. Sure. Because they just have like no time for, you know, dalliances. like they really have to make sure that they are making the most of the time they have. And like, yeah, I don't know. What are you going to say?
It's so interesting how, I don't know, like it seems like these streaming services, these studios kind of choose how many episodes a season each show gets, or just like a blanket number. And it doesn't seem to vary that much. Like I think Prime Video is pretty much 8 episodes for all of its dramas. Like someone mentioned The Boys up there, that's 8 episodes, Rings of Power's 8 episodes, Reacher about the Jarl giant man is 8 episodes a season. And it's like, do all of these stories really fit into this framework, or really just choosing 8 episodes and just going with it because it's consistent? It feels like the latter.
It does. It does. And that also goes with like the Prime Video model of release 3 episodes on premiere day. I hate that. And I feel like, especially with this season, because I have seen a couple of episodes, it didn't need it. It didn't need it the same way that, you know, like I could understand that for a first season, right? Maybe. Like you're trying to get us in the door. You want us to get a feeling for what the show's about. But now we're on season 3. Like, let the thing breathe. Let it have its moment in the sun. You know, spread those episodes out. So, yeah, there are things like that. That and the 8-episode thing where I'm like, man, like, it feels like Prime is shooting themselves in the foot with this. a little bit, because it just, yeah, someone asked a little while ago if we thought they could feasibly do the rest of the book series in like five more seasons. And I got to be honest, like, I agree with whoever said books 7 through 9 could be compressed, or really 8 through 10, in my opinion, could be compressed into like seasons 5 and 6. I worry about the final few books, though, because they're pretty large and a lot happens. And if they gave them 10 episodes, I'd be a lot less worried.
I mean, it'll depend on whether it can, in order for the showrunners to have the leverage to try and get more episodes or get anything, it needs to be successful.
Exactly.
Although, I mean, at the same time, like, The Boys is hugely widely watched, and that still has 8 episodes a season. So maybe Prime Video just refuses. It just loves the number 8. Jeff Bezos loves the number 8 so much, he will not be moved from his position. And I don't care how successful a show is, it's not more successful than Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, and so I think I need to look back at the numbers, but I'm pretty sure some of the Wheel of Time stats are better than The Boys. Yeah, they said some stuff in one of the press releases, like season two had some of the best growth of one of their series.
I can believe that.
The first season had like the best premiere still out of behind like Rings of Power and Reacher. It's like my reading was like Rings of Power, Reacher, and The Wheel of Time seem like they're three that have some of the best stats. But The Boys is, you know, that's such a cultural thing, and it's probably a lot, I don't want to say lower budget than The Wheel of Time, but like
probably
like they're not shipping people off to Morocco and Namibia to film stuff and whatever. Yeah. So my big takeaway from all these interviews, from all of the press stuff that's been coming out, because you're right, it has been a deluge of like trailers and teases and posters. There were posters that came out today, and then there was an article with other posters that came out today, and it's like, everyone's going hard. There are interviews all over the place. The cast and crew seem excited. The PR team, I know fans have in the past been like, why isn't Prime promoting it more? I do think the PR team is really going hard this season. And the material they're adapting has the potential for some really good standout moments. So it seems like they are betting everything on this season, basically, to see if one, they'll get renewed for season 4, and two, like, my pie in the sky hope is if this season does well, Prime will kind of commit more to the show, because, you know, it's the opposite story of the Rings of Power, where it's kind of been like middling and it's coasting on good old Grandpa Tolkien's name, versus Wheel of Time, where it's had something to prove, and it seems like it's consistently proving it more and more each season. So yeah,
I agree with you. It feels like it's make or break. I feel like they are putting a lot on this, but I feel like it's the time to gamble on a big splashy thing. Like, this seems like resources well spent. I have high hopes. I don't see why it couldn't be 8 seasons to tell a whole story. I haven't read all the books, mind you. I'm like, the number 4 of 11.
Yeah.
Or how many are there again? There are 11.
There are 14.
There are 14. God.
There are 14. Yeah, there are 14 books. Books 8 through 10 are what's known as the slog, quote, among fans, because there are some spots where it really drags, where it's very easy to see how they could condense things. But then again, like, you get to books 11 through 14, and it's hard to imagine how they could totally condense that into, you know,
Rafe Judkins strikes me, the showrunner, as the kind of guy who's a genuine fan of this stuff and probably been thinking about this sort of thing for a while.
Probably.
I bet he has a plan in his head. He's been nursing for years about if he gets to this point, what gets nipped, what gets tucked, what gets changed, what gets condensed.
Yes.
Or at least that's what I would do.
Yes, I think that is absolutely the case. There is one particular element from one of the books that I asked him about, which you will find it when the season premiere happens on winterscoming.net
or .com.
Or our YouTube channel, which, subscribe if you don't want to miss the interviews we have coming up.
You better subscribe.
That's right here, where you're presumably watching this.
Might as well.
Yeah, might as well. But there was one element from one of the books that he told me he has had a really clear plan for. Him and the team behind the show has had a really clear plan for how they want to do it for a while. So, and I remember seeing a quote from him a while back where he said, like, let's be honest, if we're going to condense something, it will be the slog books, yeah, you know, 8 through 10. So yeah, I think you're right. I think they've been thinking about this, mulling this for a while. And I think that's obvious in the way they've been setting some things up. Like, one of the cool things about this is there are a few elements for things that aren't relevant until like book 11, book 12, that the show has already been setting up. So it's clear they're playing the long game.
God, I had not heard of this thing from Rantel Moore that Rafe implied that Amazon had asked to be wrapped up in 4 seasons, and he said no. Oof. Which obviously he could not. Come on, Amazon, don't you want to have a big, epic, bespoke, can't get it anywhere else, giant, epic fantasy series to call your own? 8 seasons of just sit down and binge it, high fantasy fun, nowhere else. DVD sales through the roof. People do still watch DVDs? Maybe.
People would totally buy a physical release of this show. Like, let me just say, like, there are enough hardcore fans of the Wheel of Time. Even if they don't own DVD players, they would get the damn physical release to put it on a shelf. So it's stuff like that where I'm like, you know, Jeff Bezos famously was like, give me my Game of Thrones so I can put it, that can help me fund my rockets or whatever the hell. So it's like
super nuts.
Yeah, and it's like, here they like, they basically have it. It's not a Game of Thrones level phenomenon, but this is the closest they're gonna get to that with a fantasy show. I think I don't think Amazon's gonna have a better swing than this. So it's like,
I agree,
the thing that's holding them back at this point is not investing as fully in it as they should be. That's my opinion.
Yeah. And okay, so when it drops, I'm going to watch it. Hope everybody watches it. And I hope it convinces them to open up their wallets. Hope Jeff Bezos goes on his couch, finds some $1 billion and throws it at it.
Yeah.
And we'll hope for the best.
Yeah, totally. And Rant, if you have that article floating around, drop it in the chat or something. Because I am
good
horrified but curious about that. Victor says they will drop Lord of the Rings and focus on James Bond, which I don't think we have this in our lightning round. Did you see the stuff about James Bond, Dan?
We do. I believe we do.
We do? Okay.
So why don't you just simmer?
All right.
I'll
simmer.
We did.
You're right. We do. I take it back. I take back all the things that I got ahead of myself on.
Let's talk about a show that we'll get to tell its whole story. Another high fantasy show, epic fantasy show, House of the Dragon on HBO, which is about to start filming. I had some mixed feelings about the second season, but I still like it a lot. And it is nice to have the cameras almost rolling and for a little flutter in my stomach to be going again. There's this fun shot of the executive producer, Kevin Delanoy, hosting. Anybody British in the chat, I hope I say this right. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, who is basically the Secretary of Treasury of that whimsical island nation, visiting the House of the Dragon set, touring it. There are other like aerial drone photos of it that we could show you, but like, you know, it's a castle. It's a weirwood tree. It's the Red Keep. It's nothing giant and surprising. So that's going to start very, very soon. Early March is word on when House of the Dragon season 3 will start to film, which is cool. I mean, it is a little strange that the Wheel of Time, at least for the second and third season, even through the strikes, even through COVID, I think they filmed 2 and 3 kind of back-to-back-ish, and we're getting the third like a year and a half afterwards. House of the Dragon is quite successful. I don't know why HBO doesn't like make plans to film things a little faster so we don't have to wait this long, but at least it's getting to going.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very fair point. Didn't they renew seasons 3 and 4, right? They just kind of have said they are writing them back to back. That's their plan, is to do seasons 3 and 4.
It really feels like the plan is firming up. And the show's been hitting, so I can't imagine HBO would say no. And like, if you're going to commit to it anyway, just renew it now and start complaining.
Yeah, I wonder if season 4 will get here a little sooner. I mean, they're banking on that Knight of the Seven Kingdoms other spinoff to get them through the long night between seasons. But yeah, that's a fair
point. Could work. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That could probably work for me.
Yeah, I think Wheel of Time was lucky with its second and third season that the first season came out, and even if it maybe divided fans a little bit, it had some COVID problems with the way it filmed the final few episodes. I think it premiered really well for Prime. I think it was like an original where they were like, oh, this is at least doing the numbers we want to see from our original shows. And it was still kind of during the golden age of streamers will throw money at anything. So I think that they got really ahead on renewing seasons 2 and 3, because that was just the times we were in. It was pandemic era. They were like, let's roll with these. Like, I think season three was renewed for season 3 before season 2 even aired.
Feels like it was, yeah.
Yeah, so they did roll pretty quickly into filming season 3, but House of the Dragon less so. Sounds like they needed to see how season 2 went, and now they're kind of settling in. I don't know. It's this great purse string tightening that's happening across the film industry, and it's hitting all of these shows basically at this point.
Needs to distinguish itself, and I believe they all can. I mean, I'm more worried for Wheel of Time than I am House of the Dragon. House of the Dragon seems pretty set, although we didn't talk about the misgivings. Something else I wanted to mention really quickly was a little George R. R. Martin news. Of course, the author of A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Fire and Blood, yada yada yada. You know, people get on him for not having written the next book in his saga, The Winds of Winter, and making fans wait, lo, these 14 years, which is true. Although, it is kind of funny, he did sort of have a giant successful work come out in 2022, was it?
I love the way you're setting this up.
I mean, am I wrong? George R. R. Martin contributed kind of writing, lore-building background to the video game Elden Ring, which was a giant hit, which is just inarguably a big epic fantasy action adventure hack and slash die every 3 seconds forever game, Elden Ring. And he was talking about it to I think IGN and just brought up what he did on it, which again, come with the background, the lore, the prehistory. Mm-hmm. I had some ideas about magic and the runes. There are a lot about runes, and I worked it all out. It sounds like he really was involved. He didn't travel anywhere. They came to him, which is just kind of interesting. But he also talked about an Elden Ring movie. Now, you and I have both played Elden Ring. Yes. We were part of the people who jumped on board that game when it came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It was very fun. It was very beautiful. It was very challenging. It was very immersive. I feel like it did have Martin's stamp on there a bit in terms of the kind of dense prehistory and the, you know, warring gods felt very him. And they've been talking about a movie about it, and I just thought it was worth saying that he's went in as well, saying that, well, I can't say too much about it, but there is some talk about making a movie out of Elden Ring. We'll see if the Elden Ring movie comes to pass, and what the extent of my involvement was, I don't know. I'm a few years behind with my latest book, so that also limits the amount of things I can do. Ha 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 ha. Of course, the reference to the Winds of Winter there. So just fun Elden Ring movie. I'd probably watch it.
Yeah, I mean, of course I would watch it. I enjoyed Elden Ring. I don't know that we need an Elden Ring movie. Elden Ring is one of those things that is, you know, From Software, the video game company that made Elden Ring, they have such a specific style of storytelling in their games where they like sprinkle little tidbits of lore around. Like, they're very, nebulous with the way the story works. Like, it kind of rewards you for going out of your way to figure stuff out and piecing it together yourself. That, like, I don't know how well that would translate to a movie. Like, it could still be cool and visually interesting, but I don't know. That's one of those things where it's like they made the most of the medium they had. You know what I
True.
Like, it's one of those, you know, those stories that uses all the everything that its specific medium can do. And I feel like there's no way a movie would be able to live up to that.
I disagree. I'm not sure it's a movie Hollywood is willing to make. Like, I think for when you're talking about these video games, especially like older ones that don't have much in the way of dialogue, and Elden Ring is a very video gamey video game.
Yes.
Where there really isn't much talking. It's just about the atmosphere and the hacking and the flashing. Yeah.
Yes.
I think like a near silent movie where it's just the visuals and just the style could be really cool. I don't think anybody has enough balls to really do that, but like a big budget, epic fantasy, near dialogue-less movie carried by the imagery, I'd be into that.
Yeah. I think an animated, I could see it working really well animated as well, which like, you know, would that capture the same audience? We can debate, but I like the grotesque creatures and stuff, the more artsy approach of a near silent type of adaptation with very little dialogue. That's the sort of thing I could see like an animated Elden Ring really, really slapping. There's some interesting talk in the chat going on about like how much Martin really contributed to Elden Ring. I agree with what Bubo said. Elden Ring lore is 100% Martin, even the names. And it's like, yeah, when you start digging into it, it really sounds like the sort of thing he would come up with. Like, you know, all of the warring siblings, like these demigods are siblings.
Sure.
There are like affairs and stuff where, if I remember right, one of them went to have a relationship with another, and that was a facet of themselves. And it like, it's all very convoluted and very George R. R. Martin. Dan, you've gone really hard on the lore on this, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Did you see the Martin stamp?
I didn't. I mean, I couldn't tell if it was the Martin stamp or just this high fantasy stuff, because I haven't played other FromSoft games, and I understand this is very, it's pretty common for them. Although for everyone out there, there's no Elden Ring. In this game, there is a holy sacred goddess queen named Marika. Yes. And she's married to a dude named something who's just a man. And then he leaves and she splits her consciousness into a new person called Radigan. And then she marries herself, this other aspect of herself. She has kids with herself. And this other aspect of herself, this male part, also marries somebody else at one point and has kids with them. This game's crazy.
That's and that is so George R. R. Martin. Dysfunctional.
I don't know if that's George R. R. Martin.
Tell that to Jaime and Cersei Lannister. Like, I think and like
maybe a little,
you know, Godwin the Golden, Godfrey the Grafted. Like, there are all of these names where it's like these are George R. R. Martin names. You know, Marika and Mikala are twin, or not Marika.
Melania,
sword wielder, yes, Melania and Mikala are twins. Like, there are all of these little elements where I'm like, there's another one. What's his name? He's like the very first boss of the game.
Morgott. No.
Morgott is his real name. So Morgott is like, we're shaming ourselves right now. Look, chat, it has been a while since either of us has played Elden Ring, but one of them was like the one who
Margit.
So I think Margit is actually Morgott once you get to know him, his actual identity. And it is a situation where like he guards the capital, but he was deformed, so he's not allowed to actually be the ruler of the capital. And it's very Tyrion Lannister a little bit.
Yeah.
So there are all of those little things where it's like Martin does kind of reuse motifs with his characters. Like, if you've read like some of his other books, you start to see that too, like those sorts of recurring ideas pop up. So Elden Ring, really, I could see it. But like you said, like the From Software stamp is also obviously very strong too.
It was a good match, and if there was ever a movie, I'd watch it. All right. Same. A lot of talk about something that might never happen. Daniel, are you or are anybody out there watching anything, reading anything that you want to talk about?
This is a hard one for me this week. So I have seen a little bit. So yes is the answer. Everything I've been watching has been stuff that I have gotten screeners for that is embargoed out.
Oh, true.
So like I've been watching a lot, but I can't talk about it. I can talk about one of them next week and then one of them the week after. So aside from the things I can't talk about that I've been spending a decent amount of time watching, Severance, I'm still current on, still enjoying. That show has been great this season. I enjoyed the last episode. Every episode since Woe's Hollow, I've liked more than Woe's Hollow. But the last one, I think it's Attila, was really good.
That's one's really, really good. Yeah.
Have you seen the next one? Because you're watching ahead, right?
Yeah, I've got some of the screeners.
He's straight with us.
It's I won't say exactly how. It's a little Woe's Hollow-esque in that it is a bit of a departure, but it's not as like a why are we doing this kind of departure.
Yeah. Okay. That's I'm intrigued.
And very beautiful. The next one is for, and this means a lot for the show. It is the trippiest episode of Severance they have yet produced, definitely.
Okay.
And this is a trippy show. So that should tell you something.
I can get on board with that. I hope there's at least one song from the 70s. That's my Severance hope for this next episode.
There is a song from the 70s. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. There we go. All right. We're back. A couple of others I've been watching. Valerie shouting out in chat. I've also been watching. So Pantheon remains really good. I'm almost done with the first season of that. That's a sci-fi cyberpunk type show, animated show that was originally on AMC and is now on Netflix. And then Mythic Quest, which is on Apple. It's airing its fourth season right now. Mm-hmm. And the fourth season has been a lot of fun. Feels like a return to form for the show. It has never been bad, but it fluctuated a little bit in seasons 2 and 3. And the fourth season's been really good. Watching all of those. I can't remember if we talked about The Gorge last week.
I don't think we did, although I heard about it. That's the one where Anya Taylor-Joy and a man are
Miles Teller
sniping the gates to hell.
Yes, and it's not a literal gate to hell. The trailer kind of was misleading. It was like, it's the gate to hell down there. And dude, that was just someone being like, it's real scary. I think it's the gate to hell. Like, it's not literally the gate to hell. It's just a big canyon with some spooky stuff in it. There are two snipers working for opposite governments as contractors to keep an eye on this canyon and shoot all of the creatures that try to get out of it. And they have a romance, cross canyon romance. They have lots of cute little scenes where they hold up signs for each other. I enjoyed it a lot. Once they got into the canyon, spoilers, it's in the trailer, but it's still a spoiler. Once the movie moves into the details of what the gorge is, it felt a little rushed to me. Like, I enjoyed their datey stuff the most. Bro.
You tell them to call back.
Busy. I am busy. We're recording a podcast here.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
The era of landlines, may they go away forever. I did watch The Gorge. I enjoyed The Gorge. And I think it's Apple TV Plus's like best release for an original movie like ever.
Cool.
So it is being really well received.
Some are talking about Yellow Jackets up there. I have not seen Yellow Jackets. Have you? Because it's a good show. I just never got around to it.
So Yellow Jackets, I watched Yellow Jackets in much the way that I watched Twin Peaks, which irked you so much a week or two ago, where my wife watched Yellow Jackets and I watched a decent amount of it as I was dipping in and out of the room and multitasking. So I have seen enough of Yellow Jackets to know what it is and know why people are excited about it, but I am not very invested in Yellow Jackets. People seem to be really liking the new season of it, from what I've gathered.
Cool. I watched The White Lotus, and I tried to watch Reacher because I was considering covering it for the site because it's a very popular show.
You wanted to watch Big Man Punch Things?
Big Man Punch Things. Well, it's like taciturn, heroic, conflicted Big Man Punch Things.
Yes.
I thought it was nice. I'm not sure I'll continue to watch, but if anybody out there has Reacher opinions, I'd be curious. I have theories about why it's so popular. I feel like it's just this straightforward kind of big hero man story connects to something primal in the culture. And it's well done. I'm not saying it's not well done. It seems like a good show. But it's one of those shows that feels a little like a cable show of old, like a cop show back in the day, which I mean, Crusher back in the day. No problem.
Yeah. I think that is part of Reacher's appeal and probably part of why it has done as well as it has, because it's not, you know, it's not shooting for the same nerdy audience as like the shows we typically talk about on here. It feels more like, for lack of a better term, like dad fiction. Which the books feel that way to me as well. You know, like they're more grounded in the real world. Like you said, there's just something primal and simple about the Reacher idea, which is basically he's this, I think, retired military guy who is just so big that people can't push him around. So he goes around and pushes the bad people around on behalf of the people who can't do the pushing themselves.
Dad fiction sounds reductive, but I mean, I'll take it. I feel like there should be a little bit of making fun of this here, but not in a way that's offensive.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to be reductive. Like God. You know what I mean.
At the bookstore,
they have certain books they market around Father's Day, and Reacher is one of those kinds of books, in my opinion. Kind of like histories and biographies are also those kinds of books. Thrillers that are typically like military, you know, not socioeconomic, but like political thrillers, like those all get shoveled out at Father's Day on the books for dad table. That's more what I mean. But yeah, that is perhaps a little reductive. But I think that's more the audience Reacher was trying to grab necessarily than like success, very, very successfully. It is one of Prime Video's most successful shows. And this season, the twist of all twists, Reacher has to contend with a person even bigger than him.
I bet he can beat him.
I bet he'll have to use his smarts as well as his biceps.
But the other guy's a bad guy. But Reacher's a good guy.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny. There's an interview somewhere with Lee Child, who wrote the books, about how like one of their big accomplishments for this season was actually finding the big man who was bigger than Reacher to play that part. And it's, you know, it's a person like the Mountain, the dude who played the Mountain from Game of Thrones. It's that type of thing where they needed a
five
body
years
builder.
Ago that they would have hired Hafþór Bjornsson.
Yes, totally. But yeah, Reacher's doing very well. It's in its, I think, third season now.
Yeah.
So happy for everyone enjoying it, but I have not watched it yet because I've been too busy watching Secret Things I will talk about in the coming weeks.
Okay, we should move on to the lightning round. I have one really...
We're making good time.
We are. We're making good time.
We have time if you want to. If you want to take a diversion, if you have a thought.
Okay, it's like there was something about Reacher when I watched it that just, you're right, there's like these shows that are kind of aimed at people like us who want something more expansive and nerdy and sci-fi fantasy, and there's something about a show like Reacher almost looks down on that. It literally, in the first scene, there is a joke about a just stay with me here.
Okay.
A disco record recorded by Broadway superstar Ethel Merman.
Okay.
Who was big back in the day.
Sure.
And it's portrayed as just like, who would want this crap? And I was like, not only have I heard that disco record by Ethel Merman, I have loved that disco record by Ethel Merman. And I feel like this is a perfect example of how Reacher just isn't trying to appeal to me. Because if it were, it would be like, you gotta hear this.
Gotcha. So it wasn't even necessarily the power fantasy of Reacher being this big dude going around punching people that turned you off. It was him. It was the show shading Ethel Merman was the line that crossed for you.
And I feel like people who would like the idea, the dorky, stupid, obscure, nerdy idea of Ethel Merman singing disco, which I do. So that was just kind of struck me, and that was like literally it was the first like 2 minutes. I was like, what are the odds this came up?
Well, hey, I mean, I guess kudos to Reacher for letting you know out of the gate this may or may not be a show for you. That was their barometer, their stress test. If you get down with the Ethel Merman joke, maybe you'll like Reacher. If not,
it's amazing. Like, she sings No Business Like Show Business, which is a disco track, and doesn't change a thing.
Okay, like,
she's just any different. Crazy. Daniel, what map is behind you? We gotta get off this stat.
Oh no, we don't need to talk about that map. That's from one of my books.
Oh no way. Okay, yes. Another time.
This is a hand-drawn map. That's why it looks like a child drew this. I colored that shit in with colored pencils. years and years and years ago.
We will do an episode about this sometime, a video about this, because now I'm curious too.
Okay.
But not the time. But not for today. Now, let's move on to the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go over a bunch of stories. We couldn't get to main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions, no more, no less, except when we do more or less, and Richard busses us out.
Okay. Who goes first?
I don't know. Daniel, ask me.
I have to read to you first because I want the second one.
Okay.
Avatar Seven Havens is a new animated Last Airbender sequel series coming sometime.
Yeah. After Last Airbender, man, is exploding. They have this remake going on Netflix. They're making a new animated sequel series, which was a sequel to the last sequel animated series, Legend of Korra, which was a sequel to Avatar The Last Airbender. I don't know. I'm not sure if the show's time has passed or if it still has juice left in it, but God bless them. They're going to try. And it's from original creators, and they're trying to push it forward. So interesting. I'm interested. I'm curiously interested. Daniel, sci-fi homestead Apple TV Plus is going to air a show called Murderbot on May 16th. What do you know about it?
I'm so psyched for this. Murderbot is a very, very popular sci-fi series by an author named Martha Wells. Apple TV Plus is making a show based on it with Alexander Skarsgård as the Murderbot, a self-hacking robot who says they want nothing to do with human emotions but are drawn to them and love watching soap operas. It is going to be fun. This is a comedic sci-fi. Probably going to be one of the bigger sci-fis of the year.
Everything's coming in May, like in April. It's crazy. You've got to space these things out. Okay, go on.
Yeah, totally. All right. Oh, here we go. Speaking of things I jumped the gun on earlier in the show, Amazon has gained full creative control of the James Bond franchise from MGM.
I think we're going to get a James Bond TV show in T-minus any minute now. I heard that before, the people who were in charge of it, the Broccoli family, Barbara Broccoli and somebody else, wanted to like make another James Bond movie with a new James actor in the role of James Bond. I think Amazon wants to expand. It wants to do like game shows and it wants to make TV shows and movies. I'm sure we'll get the cinematic universe any day now. Daniel. Oh, another big changing of the guard. Kathleen Kennedy, the president of Lucasfilm, who is basically responsible for Star Wars as we know it over the past 10 years, word is she's going to retire by the end of this year.
I will believe it when she actually retires. I don't get down on the Kathleen Kennedy hate. A lot of people really don't like her very much. I think she's done a lot of great work over the years, but Star Wars, I think we can safely say Star Wars has floundered real badly in the past decade. So I hope that whatever changing of the guard, breath of new energy comes in to Lucasfilm helps resolve that.
I mean, it's not any... I'm going over the buzzer. I don't care. It's not anybody's like... It's not like whoever's in charge is going to be subject to Disney, and Disney's edict is make a billion things and make $1 billion. Like, that's the problem. I really don't think like the person in charge is the issue.
I kind of hope it's not Dave Filoni. I'm a little worried he would be the person to replace her. And I like Dave Filoni, but he's his own type of Star Wars. I don't know if he should be running the entire show. But yeah, speaking of things that have nothing to do with Lucasfilm, but make me cringe anyway. So it's official. John Lithgow, the Trinity Killer, will play Dumbledore in HBO's Harry Potter show.
Yeah, John Lithgow. Oh, I remember him. Dick Solomon from Third Rock from the Sun or Cliffhanger, whatever. He's a great actor. And this is the first confirmation of a casting we have for this Harry Potter show they're making. Pardon me. He's American, which is odd. And they're making a Harry Potter show, which is... but here we go. Here we go. Get ready for a lot of news about this.
Ugh.
Scrap that. Daniel.
Yes.
As I called, the second season of The Last of Us will premiere on HBO and Max on Sunday, April 13th.
Yes. Yes, you called it. It's coming out. That will be the same week that The Wheel of Time airs its finale. I'm very excited. The Last of Us Season 2, adapting the first part of The Last of Us Part 2, which is one of the best video games of recent years. Really incredible. The Breaking Bad of video games, in my opinion.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. It's gonna break people's hearts and minds.
I hope so.
Hopefully. So here's a Star Wars that you like, that we like, that the people like and are excited for. Star Wars Andor Season 2 premieres April 22nd, and the trailer was pretty rad.
It was, yeah. I loved that trailer. It was... Andor is that Star Wars show that feels... It does feel different than a lot of the Star Wars things, but not in a way that's cloying or trying too hard. It just feels original, and that's okay, which seems harder to do than you would think. Mm-hmm. And this trailer had like a rock soundtrack and not a lightsaber in sight. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. Dan, do you want me to ask you this last one? How do you feel?
I'm fine either way.
Let me ask you this, because okay, I think you have more thoughts about this than me, and I want to hear your thoughts about it more than I want to talk about it.
Sure.
So Michelle Trachten, this is a sad one, so we will probably not be buzzing this out. Take your time talking about this one. So Michelle Trachtenberg, who played Dawn in Buffy, was apparently found dead in her apartment. So she's dead at the age of 39. Really sad.
Yeah, incredibly sad. I was a huge fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer when I was younger. I can tell you lots of Dawn lines. I really liked her on that show. She went on to be in Gossip Girl. I remember she blew up as Harriet the Spy when I was like a little kid. She and Pete and Pete. Yes, can't forget that. Thank you, producer Rich, for Pete and Pete. She had a long career. And anytime someone dies young like this, they don't know the cause of death, by the way. Yeah. They think it might have been complications from a liver transplant. It's incredibly sad. And there's nothing really much to say except that I really liked her work. I recommend it if you're interested in watching any of the things she did, to go out and see them, because she did a lot of good stuff. And our best to her friends and family.
Yeah.
And that's about it. So on that cheery note, we're going to, yep, as Robert says, Harriet the Spy. Good one.
Yeah. It's very sad. It's very sad to hear about, you know, I feel like it's a little reassuring that it is a natural causes type thing. Like, you know, usually when you hear a story like this, it's like, was
it
drugs or something? We don't know. But as of right now, I believe the police are not investigating it for any suspicious activity or anything like that. So just a sad thing that happened. But yeah, Dan, how do we want to close out here from that very somber note?
I say you should like and subscribe. The winter is coming YouTube channel. And return here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST to watch us do Take the Black live, where we'll cover these and stories like these, give you our searing opinions, insights, discussions about all things forever and ever, every Wednesday from here into the heat of the universe. You can find us in podcast form in Google Play, iTunes, YouTube Music, you know, wherever you get podcasts, we'll be there. Spotify. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a comment. You guys are doing great on that. Lots of comments this week. Love to see it. And we'll see you soon. And check back for more Wheel of Time interviews and stuff as we ramp up to the premiere. Goodbye, everybody. Have a pleasant evening or morning, depending on where in the world you are right now. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.